بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. With the hastening and the return of our Imam, let's recite the salawat. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. We've been trying to touch on some of the lines and teachings of Ziyarat Ashura, as this is a ziyarah that we remember most in the month of Muharram, but we should be remembering on the other months of the year and the other days of the year. One of the lines that we find in Ziyarat Ashura, in fact, a line that is repeated, perhaps the second most repeated line in Ziyarat Ashura, is the concept of La'n. There's two major concepts in the ziyarah from the beginning to the end. The first is Salam. We start with Salam, As-salamu alayki ya Aba Abdullah. But the second most repeated concept in Ziyarat Ashura is La'n. لعن الله أمة أسست أساس الظلم والجور عليكم أهل البيت. لعن الله أمة قتلتكم. لعن الله أمة أسرجت وألجمت وتنقبت لقتالك. اللهم لعن أول ظالم ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع إلى. These different lines of La'n that you have repeated in the ziyarah, from the beginning to the end, the first most repeated concept in Ziyarat Ashura is Salam. Second most repeated concept in Ziyarat Ashura is La'n. First point regarding this, obviously La'n is not a very pleasant thing. Right? It's not a It's an expression that stems from dislike towards a person or a people. And what you're asking for is not a pleasant thing to ask. You're cursing, literally, that's the Arabic equivalent of curse. La'anallah, wallah curse these people. In today's context, there is a notion that looks down upon this. And I have seen many times when people affected by this subconsciously want to translate or put into words some of these concepts, like la'an, they find it difficult. Oh Allah, curse this person or the other person. Recite a salawat, please. I'm sorry to ask, but if we can have the echo off, it's a little distracting. Recite another salawat, please. A third salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. And it's important that we conceptually analyze what's going on, clarify for ourselves, so that if it's right, then feel confident. And if it's not, okay, let's scrap it. Let's change it. Let's get rid of it. You know? Let's not be somewhere where we're confusing ourselves. On one hand, we are saying it in Arabic. We are reading it. We are repeating it. We consider it a recommendation. On the other hand, we get another teaching and then we are sort of confused here. Let's clarify it for ourselves. The concept of la'an in general, and then we'll get to the other points regarding it. Why is la'an repeated so much? Why is it so important to have? If ziyarat Ashura is to be repeated on a daily basis, according to the hadith, let's not forget that we've been reminding ourselves of this. Ziyarat Ashura is something to be repeated every day. If the salam is nice to repeat every day, if the du'as for the Ahlul Bayt are nice to repeat every day, the la'an is also good to repeat every day. There's a reason why the la'an needs to be repeated, and then in the ziyarah it's repeated so many times. Let's clarify this. The first thing that needs to be said is that this notion that we need to remove hate altogether is a confused notion. It's an unreal notion. It is impractical, illogical. The people who suggest it either don't know what they're talking about, or if they are, they are hypocrites, very clearly. Why? There are definitely certain things that those people who suggest this think need to be avoided. They are bad. They dislike it. One of the ones, at the very least, speaking very rationally and very logically, is hate itself. The people who speak against hate, they hate hate. They dislike it. If anybody speaks what they consider hate speech, they will hate on that person. It's interesting, the ones who come out and say this person is a hate preacher, the other person is a hate preacher, suggesting that preaching any type of hate is wrong, are actually the ones that are preaching everyone else to hate that person and whatever they're saying. If you analyze, if you think for yourself, you're not taken with the media and the environment they create, with the hype they create, with the repetition and putting those figures up there and the language they use, they sort of trick you into thinking. Have you seen these different tricks they use? Not on media, but trickery that is used, they make you think they're taking a rabbit out of a hat. Okay, these different tricks, they trick your vision. Okay. They're not real, they trick your vision. In the media, that's what's happening. That's what constantly happens. Trickery is used to confuse us. We don't realize what's happening. In the name of hate being bad, they are promoting hatred against certain people. There's no way on earth a person can remove hate out of themselves. You always have hate. There is love, there is hate. There's strong dislike. That's what hate is. Very strong dislike. What you do with that, how you treat that person, that's a different thing. The strong feeling that a person has against someone is called hatred. Very strong dislike. To say that we're not going to hate is wrong. You don't have a choice, number one. Secondly, there are definitely things. We may differ on what needs to be kept out of society. And once you identify that something is harmful, something is bad, then you definitely are going to have very strong feelings against it. Unless you're just saying it, you're not real about it being very bad. If you identify, if you believe, if you really consider something to be bad, when you see it, you naturally start having certain feelings towards it. It's impossible. And it's important that we understand this. Okay? Don't get confused with this. Don't get confused and think that hate is bad in and of itself, number one. Secondly, don't get confused and think the ones who are actually saying this really have removed hate from their hearts. They have removed hate from their language. They have removed hate from their actions. No, they have not done that. None of them have. It is not possible. It is a feeling that you will have once you have identified something really bad. It's just... So then after we have gotten past this, hopefully we'll repeat this, we move past the confusions. The question that exists is about what you're going to love and what you will hate, what you will like, what you will dislike, what is lovable and what is something to be hated. That's the question. That's what people defer on. But everybody has that. Everybody has that, those feelings in them. What we are supposed to do is to make sure we love what is actually lovable and we hate what must be hated. In the material realm, supposedly scientifically, because unfortunately increasingly people's ego, their self and personal interest is misleading judgments regarding what's actually good and what's actually bad for people. Things that are physically very clearly, materially wrong and bad and hurtful and harmful for people are being promoted. And things that are good for you are not at least being promoted as much. And so sometimes you start questioning the judgments that are there about these different foods. But the understanding is there. People realize that there are certain things that are good for you. They need to be promoted. You need to like those foods. Adults always get onto children, why don't you like vegetables? Kids are like, I don't like vegetables. Like ice cream, like chocolate. These are the things that they like. The parent wants them to like broccoli. You want, as a parent in society, they want children and people to like certain foods. Why? Because they're actually good for them. There's something in that liking. They want you, what you feel you want to have, to match what's actually good for you. And what you dislike and you really want to push away and never have should be something that is really harmful for you. Some people can get really worked up about certain substances, certain foods. Even there, unfortunately, we have extremes like this vegetarian diets or vegan diets and so on. These are not based in fact and in what's actually good for you. But the idea is there. Again, if you see certain vegans are so strict about it, they have developed feelings. They develop feelings towards the food they're going to eat. And it's something that actually tastes really good. Some people, when they just hear about steak, their mouth starts watering. But that vegan has developed feelings against it. They start to despise certain foods. Strong dislike, same idea, it's hate. And they start developing certain strong love, liking, desire for certain other foods. Okay. The conversation that each of these groups has is about what's good for you. They have their own explanation about why this is actually good. You should develop that. And if you don't, you're going to be in trouble. We're doing the right thing. We're liking the right food. We are disliking the wrong one. In terms of our love for people and our dislike for people, again, it's inevitable. Get this. Understand this. It is inevitable. You will develop strong negative feelings towards certain people. You will develop very strong positive feelings towards other people. The issue is, understand who you have the positive feelings towards and who you have negative feelings towards, and make sure that those feelings are in accordance to what's actually right, what is good, a person that should be liked and a person that should be disliked. That's what Ziyarat Ashura does for us. That's what the numerous Ziyarat do for us. They don't ask the question of whether this is right or wrong. It's given. We have hadith. I don't want to take too much time on that. I already explained it. I want to move past that. But just for your reference, a clear hadith. هَلِ الدِّينِ إِلَّا الْحُبِّ وَالْبُغْضِ. Is religion anything other than love and hate? It's a combination of the two. And it doesn't say Islam is that. It says deen is such. In other words, the deen of anyone is that. The deen of any individual, Muslim or non-Muslim, is the combination of the love and the hate that that person has. Who do they love? Who do they hate? That's their deen. هَلِ الدِّينِ إِلَّا الْحُبِّ وَالْبُغْضِ. This is a very strong statement. It's repeated by the Ahlul Bayt. سَلَامُ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. What does Ziyarat Ashura tell us? A couple of things. Moving past the first point here, who it needs to be towards. I said we're going to get into that, but there's one smaller point here that, before getting into who, needs to be mentioned. It's important that you increase your strong dislike or hatred towards the ones that deserve it. That's something we learn from the Ziyarat and Ziyarat Ashura particularly as well. It's important that we have that. Otherwise, if it was something that was naturally going to form, we didn't have to work on it, we didn't have to develop it, or we don't have to spend more time on it to develop, then the Ahlul Bayt wouldn't have told us, maybe repeated less. The second most repeated line in Ziyarat Ashura, La'an. If you add some of the other lines that pretty much mean the same idea, just in different wording, then they may start getting very similar in terms of frequency. And you can't really pinpoint which one is more than the other. You say, إِنِّي سَلْمُ لِمَنْ سَلَمَكُمْ right after it, حَرْبُ الرِّمَنْ حَرَبَكُمْ. That's the la'an part. إِنِّي سَلْمُ لِمَنْ سَلَمَكُمْ وَحَرْبُ لِمَنْ حَرَبَكُمْ. Love, hate. And then, وَلِيٌّ لِمَنْ وَلَاكُمْ عَدُوٌّ لِمَنْ عَدَاكُمْ. Love, hate again. If you add these, I'm not sure if you're going to end up that whole line, Allahumma inna hadha yawmun tabarrakat bihi banu Umayyah wa ibn akilat al-akbar. That entire thing is la'an, right? Allahumma khussa anta awwala zalimin bil la'an minni. Again, entirely la'an. And I'm not sure if we're going to end up with more la'an. It shows that it's not something that you just leave it and it naturally develops the right way. And it isn't enough just to mention bad people or bad actions and then say, dislike the action. That's not enough. What we learn from Ziyarat Ashura is it's important to identify the action that is wrong and identify the people who have done it. And develop strong dislike towards them, hatred by repeating these words towards them. It's important that we do that. This is what we naturally take from Ziyarat Ashura. It's not rocket science. It's not some tafsir that requires 50 different premises before you get to it. Just look at it. Open your eyes. La'an, 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 la'an. Why do you have so much la'an? Why is that repeated? If you understand, if you don't understand it, you're not an Arab speaker, you don't look at the translation, you don't think of the meaning there, you're just reading words, you don't understand what part of it is salam, what part of it is la'an. Once you understand what is being said, every other sentence, Allahumma la'an, Allahumma la'an, Allahumma la'an, well, that has an effect on you. It has an effect on you. What we learn from it, again, is, all right, then that there seems to be a need for me to remind myself of the people who are doing wrong, the wrong they are doing, and say things besides doing things. We ask Allah in the ziyarah, we are told to announce to the imam and ask Allah that I am going to be the enemy of those who are enemies of the Ahlul Bayt. That's another action that we're supposed to do. That's acting against those who do bad. A certain level of act, of course. But then certain things need to be said. Allahumma la'an, la'an. Curse needs to be mentioned. You need to say it. We say the salawat, please. So this is something to learn. You need to remind yourself and you need to repeat those words to create and increase the dislike that you have towards bad people. One last thing about the who part, one last part, because I feel certain Islamic concepts and teachings resemble ideas that are outside of the Islamic context. We live in an environment that the concepts we hear here in this setup and in discussions and discourses of Islamic material may sound very similar to things that we hear outside, and we may not be able to see the difference between the two. We don't have these walls in our minds separating the Islamic material from the non-Islamic material. And if there's a term, a concept that's mentioned here, and a concept that is similar in terminology outside, we tend to mix them up, and sometimes that causes confusion. Many times it may. So that's why I want to mention this line. We are talking about the strong dislike that needs to be there towards the person, the people who do wrong, and the wrong action. Both of those are there. We are not talking about what that means in action. All right? We are not suggesting that means if I hate Yazid ibn Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan and his dad and his grandfather, that if I would see him, the least I would do would slap him in his face. The least I would do would be to hit him hard or whatever. That's not what we're suggesting. And a lot of other things are things that we're not suggesting. What we are suggesting is an inner feeling towards the person and their action. What that is going to mean in action is a different thing. If we get the concept of hate as is used outside, and the people who promote it and suggest it, and they talk about it, that hatred translates into something practical. When they preach hatred towards Muslims, that means some redneck going and picking up a shotgun and shooting people who even resemble Muslims, like Sikh people. I think it was Ferguson. A couple Sikhs were shot to death because they thought these guys were some sheikh. They mistook them for me. I don't know, there's a huge difference between that amama and this amama. I'm not hiding my hair with it. That's a different. I don't know if they do that. That's my maybe inaccurate understanding of what that amama is for. Anyhow, there's a huge difference. That's what that hatred means. When hatred is promoted, where a person feels that they can do something like that, either here, or they put a leash on them here, when you unleash them, either in prisons or in the battlefield, that hatred shows itself in ways that you can't even speak of. This is what they call dehumanizing. Dehumanization. And they've done it so many times. I was reading a few months back, about the Second World War, which was the war of the modern world fighting each other, these modern countries, mostly Western, fighting each other like dogs over who will control the world. That's really what it was. One of the most horrific scenes of massacre that you could imagine, just reading descriptions of what they did to themselves, Western people to Western people, and Western people to non-Western people. They can't recite a what? They categorized people, and then the way they made themselves feel about the other, when there was no law, they were unleashed, the way they dealt with them, was reading about what they did with the Japanese when they went fighting in that region, how they would play with their skulls after their death. Is that another salawat? Don't confuse what is said in an Islamic context by Muslim speakers who know what they're talking about from Islamic scripture and what is heard outside. There's numerous examples. I think Thursday night we were talking about something, another example of that, slavery. When you mention slavery in Islam, everybody thinks of what they know of slavery. Not realizing what you're thinking of slavery has nothing to do with Islamic slavery. Slavery that was and is in Islam. Okay. We don't have slaves. The concept of slavery, however, has not been abrogated. It's still there. Okay. Don't confuse the two. That's a different thing. What was done in the United States against a certain race, right, and in Europe against multiple races, and in other parts of the world, other than the Muslim world and other than Islam, don't confuse the two. So when we're talking about the concept of hatred and la'an, understand what is being said and don't assume anything other than that because of something that's said by others. Two concepts can be brought together and considered correlated outside of the Islamic teachings, but in the Islamic teachings, no. So what we're talking about is this. It is important, let's get back on track on the discussion. Based on Ziyarat Ashura, we realize it is important to identify those who are bad and make sure we develop dislike towards them. And we increase that by reminding ourselves of who they are and what they did and what they're doing, and increase that feeling. This is up to now what we have understood. The last point regarding that is, who do we need to have this towards? This also needs to be corrected. The first thing that we need to suggest regarding this is going to the ziyarat as they are from the Ahlul Bayt. I don't usually like doing this in this type of a setup, but now that it's come to it, I want to be a little more accurate on this discussion. Brothers and sisters, we have got to make sure we are particular about taking things that are said to us as being from the Ahlul Bayt, making sure they're from the Ahlul Bayt. We need to do that. The ziyarat that we have from the Ahlul Bayt, we need to make sure they're actually from the Ahlul Bayt. If they're not, we need to check that ziyara with the ziyarat from the Ahlul Bayt. If it matches up, it's okay. If it doesn't, sorry. This is important. There are certain du'as that we have. For example, du'a tawassul is not a du'a that was mentioned or written or said by the imams. This is a pretty clear fact. All right? Du'a tawassul that some people recite on Tuesday nights is not something that was introduced by the Ahlul Bayt. It is a du'a that was put together by some of the ulama. We say, okay, this is not from the imams. Know it. Is there anything wrong with it? Numerous ulama have checked the material in it and compared it to what we have from the Ahlul Bayt. There's nothing that goes against it. However, again, the idea of saying that this needs to be mentioned on certain nights and it has certain effects, that's not our business. We can't do that. It's okay to do it on Tuesday night or whatever night of the week. And it's okay to do it multiple times a month or whatever. But to recommend from ourselves to do that repeatedly, that's not me said, okay, this is there. If you feel like doing tawassul to the Ahlul Bayt, you can use your own words. You can use these words. It's not something to go to and say, okay, let's take this apart. Let's learn from this dua. Dua Kumail, however, is from the Ahlul Bayt. Ziyarat Jami'ah Kabira is from the Ahlul Bayt. Ziyarat Ashura is from the Ahlul Bayt. One, all this was said for this one. We're talking about La'an here, okay? Ziyarat Ashura, there are at least two variations of. There are two variations of Ziyarat Ashura. The wording is slightly different. The one that we read, and I just read tonight as well, is not the more accurate one. It's not the more accurate one. This is the one that is more common, we are more familiar with. The reason is that since the time of the Safavids, Allama Majlisi put together a book for Ziyarat. In that book, he put this version of Ziyarat Ashura. So everybody started reading this. And then after him, Sheikh Abbas Qummi mentioned this without mentioning there's another variation. He just put this there. Okay. And so everybody is familiar with this. And everybody thinks this is the wording of the Imam. Why did those two scholars do this? They know. I don't know. I can not speak on their behalf. What I can say is that there are two major books of Ziyarat that we have as our original books on this. One is Kamilu Ziyara or Kamilu Ziyarat by Ibn Qulaway. The other is Misbah al-Mutahajjid by Shaykh al-Tusi. Kamilu Ziyarat predates Misbah al-Mutahajjid. Kamilu Ziyarat is from the time of the minor occultation. Misbah al-Mutahajjid is over or around 100 years after that. Okay, there's a century gap between Kamilu Ziyara and Misbah al-Mutahajjid. Also, Misbah al-Mutahajjid is by Shaykh al-Tusi, may Allah bless his soul, but he was very busy with numerous works in hadith, in rijal, in fiqh, in usul, in tafsir, in so many different arenas. In each of those fields, when there are experts, except for fiqh, generally the other experts are considered more qualified, generally. In this particular example, in Kamilu Ziyarat, this is a more accurate version. Kamilu Ziyarat is a more accurate version. And there's discussions on this. There's more. Go to that. I don't want to discuss what that difference is. I recommend, I suggest that communities find the version from Kamilu Ziyarat, start getting used to that version of Ziyarat Ashura. That is the more reliable, authentic version of Ziyarat Ashura. By the way, in Bihar al-Anwar of Allama Majlisi, he mentions both variations. But the ones they started distributing for people, they mentioned this particular one. Why they did that, it's for them to answer, I don't know. Recite a salawat, please. Certain certain people in Ziyarat Ashura have been mentioned by name. Others have been mentioned not by name, but by description. We have to understand this. Why did the Imam teach us to mention certain people by name? And certain other people are not mentioned by name, they're mentioned by description. Some of those whose descriptions are mentioned are well known to us. However, they have not been mentioned by name. They could have been mentioned by name, but they weren't. They were mentioned by description. For example, Shimr ibn Dhul-Jawshan is mentioned by name. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad is mentioned by name. Umar ibn Sa'd is mentioned by name. Yazid is mentioned by name. Muawiyah is mentioned by name. Abu Sufyan is mentioned by name. Marwan is mentioned by name. And his progeny, Al-Marwan. They're mentioned by name. Al-Ziyad, the father of Ubaydullah, his entire family, they are mentioned by name. Banu Umayyah, Qatibah. Okay. All of them, they're mentioned by name. These are people that are mentioned by name. Then there are certain people that are mentioned by description. For example, اللهم لعن أول ظالم ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع له على ذلك. What's the description? Whoever violates the rights of the Ahlul Bayt, whoever oppresses the Ahlul Bayt, the first to the last, from the beginning of oppression, whoever was the first, it doesn't matter who they are, what their name is, whether they were at the time of the Prophet or after the time of the Prophet, it doesn't matter. The important thing is we want to have the strong feeling towards anyone that we can identify who has violated the rights of the Ahlul Bayt. أول ظالم ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع له على ذلك. Then اللهم لعن العصابة التي جاهدت الحسين, or according to the other version, حاربت الحسين, which is more accurate. Anyone who came and fought, there's plenty of people, there were over 30,000, they're not mentioned by name, even the ones that we know, Imam al-Husayn mentioned in that. Recite a salawat, please. The various commanders of the army, there's only a few that were in Karbala that are mentioned. Shimr and Umar ibn Sa'd are mentioned. Nobody else of those in Karbala that we find their names in the Maqatil are mentioned, besides the ones that we don't even know who their names are. It wasn't important. Their names were not important. Description. Whoever fought Imam al-Husayn. These are descriptions, and then we have names. Try to think. Why do the Ahlul Bayt want us to mention names at times? Why is it important to mention names? If Ziyarat Ashura is to be repeated on a daily basis and names are mentioned, well, that means there's something important about this. Names have got to be mentioned. The names that the Ziyarat mentions, okay, as another, let me, a side point here, which is again important. If the Ahlul Bayt don't mention by name, you don't mention by name. All right, learn that from the Ahlul Bayt. Don't make things up about them. Don't make reasons for yourself to do something other than what the Ahlul Bayt have done. The Ahlul Bayt have mentioned these individuals by name. Amir al-Mu'mineen mentioned Muawiyah and Amr ibn As in his Qunut by name, and he encouraged his companions to do so as well. He was fully capable of mentioning other figures that ruled before him. He could have done that. He didn't. You don't do that. The Ahlul Bayt mentioned certain names. You mention certain names. Besides them, they are mentioned by description, and the Ahlul Bayt emphasize, teach this, look, anyone who has oppressed the Ahlul Bayt, Allah, Allahumma al'anhum jami'an. Whoever, we'll say it that way, doesn't matter who it is. And we'll talk about certain individuals, talk about what they have done, but we won't mention them by name and say, Allahumma al'an, filan and filan and filan. The Ahlul Bayt have not taught us that. The Ahlul Bayt have taught us to mention these names. That's a lesson too. Okay? Don't mention certain names, mention certain names. Why are these names mentioned? You think about it. I'll share some thoughts that come to my mind. We're supposed to analyze what the Ahlul Bayt mean by what they say. We have been given intellect, we have an aql, and then the Ahlul Bayt speak to us. We're supposed to learn from it. We're supposed to understand it. We have to realize why they mention certain names, they don't mention certain other names. Understand that. Why? Because it doesn't only apply to history. It doesn't only apply to history. It applies to after Ziyarat Ashura, during the time of the Imams as well. It applies to after that time as well. You need to learn this. Sometimes you need to mention the bad people who've done wrong. Mention them by name and say, this person has done these things and he's wrong, and oh Allah, curse him. And sometimes you shouldn't mention their name. Just say, whoever does these types of things, oh Allah, curse them. People, whoever does this thing, they're wrong. And you shouldn't like them, you should dislike them. We've got to apply that principle. So we have to try to analyze and understand this. Why did the Ahlul Bayt mention these names? There's something that comes to mind, and I'll share that, but you guys think on your own. There are certain acts that if they are done publicly and clearly and openly at the time, they are clear acts of aggression and wrong, clear acts that deserve la'an, clear acts that are hated. They are done clearly by certain individuals. That person, with his name and his track record, becomes a symbol of that wrong. You need to mention that name, that person, because it is important to remind ourselves of that person and the wrong they did. Let me elaborate very briefly on this. Yazid and Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan and Abu Sufyan himself, these people during their lifetimes did very wrong things very openly, very clearly. But they also said words, did things that were identified as good. The combination they used to do, and they were moving towards establishing their behavior and their words as good. Listen to the words of Imam al-Husayn. Imam al-Husayn says, if I don't do this, if I don't go to Karbala, if I don't rise, if I don't reject the idea of doing bay'ah with Yazid, fa'ala al-Islam as-salam. If I give my bay'ah, fa'ala al-Islam as-salam. The severity of the matter to join and be willing to die in this way. Imam al-Husayn understood it, and he said, the saving of the religion of Islam requires the sword to take me on. فَيَا سُيُوفْ خُذِينِي. swords take me. He understood the severity of the matter. They didn't. What was the severity of matter? Changing Islam to mean that behavior. See, there's a time where the definition of right and wrong has not changed. If a person does that wrong thing, they will try to hide it and act like they didn't do it. You know they did it, they try to present it as though they didn't do it. That's one thing, it's very bad. It's very wrong. Many wrong things have happened there. However, there's a time where a person does bad things, but they do it openly, blatantly, suggesting that this is right. What I do is right. What I do is Islam. I am the Khalifa of the Prophet. Islam means this. This was what it was moving towards, brothers and sisters. This is what it means, فَعَلَى الْإِسْلَامِ السَّلَامِ. There will be no Islam. Islam would be understood in this way. The wrong act that we are supposed to hate will be seen as a good act. إِنَّ يَوْمَ عَشُرَى, or it refers to the day, إِنَّ هَذَا يَوْمٌ تَبَرَّكَتْ بِهِ بَنُوا أُمَيَّةِ. As the Khalifa of the Prophet, they used to say this yawm, this day has barakah in it. Understand this. When they do something like that, if you don't respond in this way, say that person and what he did, Allahumma la'an, it's not going to have the effect. It won't. In order to go against that person and their agenda of changing the definition of Islam, changing the definition of right and wrong, you have got to point out the person and what they have done and say, this person should be cursed. A person who's hiding the tracks of the wrongs that they have done, acting like they didn't do it, you don't mention their name. Mention whoever did this, Allahumma la'an. God curse them. That'll do the job for them. If they step it up, they try to make right wrong and wrong right, you got to mention them by name. So that you know, whatever this person does, whatever this person did, if it wasn't for the la'an that was taught by the Ahlul Bayt against Banu Umayyah, it would not have been possible to treat what the Umayyads did as outside the realm of Islam. These were people that ruled for 70 years or so, roughly. They ruled for that long. As Khulafa of the Prophet, that's what they called themselves. Some of them called themselves Khalifatullah. 70 years. During a period that writing hadith was banned. So the tradition of the Prophet is not recorded where people can go back to it. It's just in people's minds. Okay. Those minds are affected with the behavior that they have seen by these rulers for over 70 years. You know what type of change that's going to bring? The la'an that was spread by the Ahlul Bayt against these individuals by name, Allahumma la'an, Bani Umayyah Qatibah, all of them. This language had an effect on Islam and Muslims, not just on the Shia. Many, if not most, if not almost all, of the narrators of hadith tried to, how successful they were. If you read the history of hadith, a lot of us are not acquainted with that. The hadith of the Muslimin, look at the entire heritage of hadith that we have. Bukhari, if I remember correctly, this is quoting him. They knew hundreds of thousands of hadith. How many did he record in his book? Is it even 100,000? Is it even tens of thousands? If you take out the repetitions, it's not more than 4 or 5, if I remember correctly. I did the numbers a few years back. Just, we had memorized hundreds of thousands. But he said, I only mentioned the ones that are authentic. They realized, they knew, they understood, they have to filter hadith. Filter hadith from what? From all the garbage that was there. Where did that garbage come from? From the Umayyads. The Islam of the Umayyads. When they are considered bad, and la'an is done, openly mention them, they are mentioned by name, this will cause people to have this dislike towards them and whatever they had to do with. This is the reason why names need to be mentioned. I was going to talk about today as well, and thinking about who all we should be mentioning by name and who we shouldn't. We don't need to mention by name. There are certain people, certain governments that need to be mentioned by name. And certain other governments, certain people don't need to be mentioned by name. People who are openly, the same principle, same concept. People who are openly, governments who are openly doing absolutely horrific things, and they're not even hiding it. They are saying this is the right thing to do. They need to be mentioned by name, and la'an and dislike needs to be mentioned towards them as well. But the details of that, inshallah, we don't have time. I'm already over my time. We hope that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with further understanding of the words of the Ahlul Bayt, and inshallah, through that, our minds and then our hearts progress closer and closer towards the Ahlul Bayt and their path, particularly to the Imam of our time, Ajjalallah Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, wa ruhi lahu al-fida. Let me say this, with your permission. If you don't want me to say it, then speak up. Otherwise, recite a salawat, please. As we are moving closer to the coming of the Imam, we have got to filter our understanding of Islam and enrich it, to get closer and closer to what Islam actually says. Why? Because when the Imam comes, what he will preach, and he won't wait for anyone, is Islam as it was exactly at the time of the Prophet and what the Ahlul Bayt knew. He's not going to wait for you and I to agree with it, to promote it. And if we find ourselves so distanced from some of those concepts, some of those teachings, that we find them difficult to process, and we start having negative feelings towards them, that feeling inside, even if it's not spoken, will be a barrier, will be a distance between us. It is right now. The thing is, the good thing is, because he hasn't come yet, we're not at that more difficult test. When he comes, that's the more difficult test. You have a privilege right now. You can make it, and before he comes, bridge those gaps. Leave no gap. And when he comes, you're already there with him 100%. and believe the facts that it is very near. Hopefully we get to see that in the near future. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. As-salamu alaykum ya ahla وموضع الرسالة ومختلف الملائكة ومهبط ما عدنا الرحمن وخزان العلم ومنتهى الخير. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. Beloved Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. It was in your homes that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blessed us with guidance and revelation. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you. Angels descend upon you day in and day out, seeking permission before entering upon you. Sallallahu alayhi Ya Aba Abdullah Sallallahu Alaihi Ya Mazlum Sallallahu عطشانا يا مظلوم غريب كربلاء روحي فداك يا مولاي. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you, my beloved Imam al-Hussein. The Imam who was slaughtered by the shores of the Euphrates while his mouth was dry. روحي فداك يا مولاي يا أبا عبد الله. Invite us to come to Karbala. We want to visit your beautiful shrine. We want to be on the land that it all happened.
Ya Allah. I don't know where the family of the Imam is on these days. Perhaps they're still in Sha'ab. I don't know what this city was, what all happened. It's hard to have a full picture and understand why, according to the account, when Imam Zainul Abideen, salawatullah wa salamu alayhi, was asked what part of the trip was most difficult, he said, Ash-Sham, Ash-Sham, Ash-Sham. I don't know what happened there. I don't know if it was because of the incident in the court of Yazid, the Mal'un using his stick on the lips of Imam al-Husayn, or if it was for just seeing the orphans, perhaps the way they were treated in Sham. If at the time of Imam al-Mujtaba, when a man came from Sham because of the misinformation that he was given, as soon as he saw Imam al-Mujtaba, he was all alone, he was by himself, this man from Sham. The only thing he thought of were very wrong words that he said to Imam al-Mujtaba. He was ignorant, and that was what he was taught. But this is Sham. All these people have been fed that misinformation. They have been told that the Kharijis have come. I don't know, probably a lot of things are not recorded, but I can just imagine what would happen to the weaker ones. No wonder they say that the 3-year-old daughter of Imam al-Husayn had it most tough here in Sham. And the little girl, Ya Allah, I'm not sure, it's difficult to speak. Ya Allah, I don't know what they did to her. I'm sure it was difficult throughout the trip. Karbala was very difficult. Kufa was very difficult. Coming all the way to Sham was difficult. But I don't know what was said to her, what was done to her, that she remembered her father so much. And Sham. Some say the little girls there would brag about their fathers, and the little youngster, the little young girl, the daughter of Imam al-Husayn, would remember her father. She asked for him. I don't know if there were physical pains as well she was going through after all. She must have been beaten so much every time she mentioned her father. But that night, I don't know what was happening there in the little corner in the ruins of Sham. Sitting at night, I don't know how loud she was, that from the palace her voice was heard. What does she want? obviously the sounds were clear. She's speaking of her father. The Mal'oon said, well, why don't you give it to her? Ya Allah, I don't know how true this is, but a dish was sent in the container. When the cover was removed, oh Father, you finally came. But why is your forehead bleeding? You don't know what these children have said to me, inshallah. Oh, Father, can you take me with you? I believe it's possible. But hopefully it's not true. Imagine that young girl got her wish on that night while she was hugging her father's head. They saw that she's sleeping like a little angel. Ruhi fidaki, ruhi fidaki. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون يا رسول الله.